we've had a lot of great new energy and perspectives come to the team who haven't been afraid to say, whoa, let's think about that. And so that's been humbling but helpful, I think, in my growth. You know, you never stop growing. You can always learn from everybody, regardless of generation. And so I've really tried to value that.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this episode of World Strides Podcast, Changing Lives Through Education Abroad, a weekly series of conversations with international education's most interesting thought leaders, as well as discussions on emerging trends, best practices, innovation happening in our field. I'm your host, Zach McInnes, and I am so excited about this week's episode. Today, I'm looking forward to diving into a topic that I love, navigating the multi-generational education abroad workplace. As our listeners will know, we have talked a lot on this podcast about the changing composition of education abroad practitioners. Workplaces have never been as age diverse as they are today, with managers for the first time being tasked with leading up to five generations at once. Silent Generation, the Baby Boomers, Gen X, Millennials, and Gen Z. The Baby Boomers, who in so many ways created the foundations of the modern era of education abroad as we know it, are stepping back and entering retirement. At the same time, Gen X and Millennials have stepped up into leadership roles, especially within the last several years. The oldest members of Gen Z, however, a group born between the late 1990s and early 2010s, will turn 28 years old in 2024, if you can believe it. Gen Z is not only our students, they are now firmly entrenched on our teams. I am a firm believer that each generation brings unique strengths into the workplace, and that embracing those strengths makes for stronger and better teams overall. We'll delve into this and a whole lot more. I am thrilled to welcome two guests onto the pod that I know have been thinking a lot about this topic. Jeannie Simmons is the Director of Global Education at The Ohio State University and leads a large team dedicated to outbound mobility within the Office of International Affairs at OSU. Jeannie is a seasoned international educator of over 25 years and a proud Gen Xer. We love us some Jeannie. Ryan Vonderhaar is another Buckeye and serves as a global education coordinator with the College of Food, Agricultural, and Environmental Sciences at The Ohio State University. Ryan graduated from OSU in 2018 and has been on the global education team since 2019. Trust me when I say this, dear listeners, Ryan is a rising star. I am so excited for today's discussion. You do not want to miss this episode. Stay tuned for what's sure to be a sparkling conversation. Let's get into it. Welcome, Jeannie and Ryan. Thank you both for being here today. We've got a rich and fun conversation ahead of us, and I can't wait to dig in. To start us off, I would like to give you both a chance to introduce yourselves and share briefly about how you came into your current roles at The Ohio State University. Jeannie, let's start with you.
Well, thank you so much for having us today, Zach. I have been in the Office of International Affairs since 2002, always working in education abroad related roles. So my entire career here has been devoted to education abroad before becoming director in December of 2019. Prior to that, I started my international education career at Virginia Tech. And working backwards from that, I was teaching English to non-native English speakers abroad and in the U.S. And prior to that, I worked a little bit in journalism, which is what my undergrad degree was and was sort of the first indirectly led me here.
How fascinating. Thank you for sharing that, Jeannie. Ryan, over to you.
Thanks again, Zach, for having us on for this topic. I did my undergrad here at Ohio State and started in this same college. So we'll say it a couple times probably throughout this episode. As an acronym, we say CFAS, so you don't have the mouthful each time. But just to mention, I graduated with an agricultural communication degree from this college. So really, you know, I kind of found my way into study abroad a little later in my career as a student. I had a connection with this guy, Tim Hornsby, who, you know, had a huge kind of impact on my life and was a mentor to me when I was an undergrad. But Tim Hornsby, at the time when I was an undergraduate, was in the position that I'm currently in here within the college as a then study abroad coordinator. But Tim was like, you know, Ryan, I really think that you'd get a lot out of this experience. I want to talk to you about, you know, studying abroad while you're an undergraduate. And we kind of circled back on that conversation going into my senior year. It was like, hey, Tim, like, this is something I definitely want to do. Can you help me make it happen? We probably had a 2-hour appointment, which is maybe not, you know, typically how we are advising all students. You know, he really had a passion for wanting to make sure I got this opportunity. And we found a program that was right for me. It was within the college that I was a part of. And it was my first time going abroad at all. It was my senior year of my undergraduate program. And kind of since then, my eyes had been open to how much I just enjoy travel and interacting with different folks and just kind of powerful education that goes along with it. I graduated back in 2018, as you mentioned. Actually went to work for a student organization out in Kansas City called Farmhouse for a year. This role came open back here at Ohio State, and a lot of things kind of lined up for me. And I knew I wanted to come back to Columbus and Ohio in general. So I applied, got the role, and it's kind of been a whirlwind since then. You know, starting in 2019, like to say that I maybe have 3 to 4 years of normal experience and then 2 years of whatever COVID was right in the middle of it. But couldn't be more thankful. I love the role that I'm in, embedded here in the college, and we'll probably get into that a little bit later. But yeah, happy to be here. Thank you for asking me to join.
Thank you for sharing that, Ryan. I like to think of the COVID years as dog years, so we'll count that as 14 for you, sir. I appreciate you both sharing a bit about your journeys, and I want to ask a broad question. Jeannie, what is special about global education at Ohio State University?
What comes to mind first, I think, is just a sense of community. I feel like, generally speaking, and in all my years here, students generally like being Buckeyes. Maybe it's the type of students who choose to study abroad, but I feel like there is that community. You know, we've always been very heavy on faculty short-term programs, even before that was as big of a trend as it is now. So I think there's always been just almost an unspoken spirit of everybody should do this, everybody should go abroad. This is what you do. And I think even through our faculty, before I think we even had the language for it, short-term faculty-led programs were seen as a way to provide options for lots of students. And that was just sort of a thing here. And so, and having just recently traveled with a couple of groups this year, I've been fortunate to sort of see that in action, to just see that way that students come together and sort of, you know, from all majors, students who maybe never met each other, and, you know, sort of work to have a successful time overseas. So it's really, I think, that Buckeye sense of community.
Ryan, what would you add to that? What makes global ed special at Ohio State?
I think the one thing that I would add into it, and I don't know that it's totally unique here at OSU for us, but we have a ton of really passionate faculty members that are really interested in getting students abroad. It was funny, I had a meeting with a faculty member even yesterday, and it's like, not that there were like negative feelings or anything shared on the call, but they were really ingrained in what they were essentially working to make happen with their program. And it reminded me, like, you know what, I will always take passion over, you know, somebody who's just lackadaisical or doing this just to show up because it's a part of their job. Their appointment is to set up, to run a program. Some of them are just passionate about it and they want to get students abroad. But that's a consistent piece, you know, interacting with many different faculty members is kind of sharing this mission. They want to have students have this kind of diverse set of experiences when they graduate from Ohio State. And a big piece of that for many of our faculty is getting students abroad and learning in that kind of unconventional way.
I heard two through lines of what you both said. It's passion and community. Before we go any further, I would like to pause here and recognize that Jeannie is my favorite type of leader, which is to say she's someone who's worked her way up. She knows how to unjam the printer in the office and how to set a strategic objective for her office and lead like a boss. Jeannie, let's start big picture, if you will, as we approach today's topic. What comes to mind when you think of leading a multi-generational education abroad team in 2024?
Well, I think you hit on a lot of things actually at the top of the podcast there, Zach, too, with just how much has changed. So I think about the multi-generationalness of our workplace in as one layer. I feel like, you know, after COVID, as we know, the whole workplace, not just in the education abroad field, got really shaken. You know, people left jobs in greater numbers. Different types of people starting to apply for jobs that, you know, sort of felt like the snow globe that was shaking the dog years of COVID. And then once it kind of settled, it was like, okay, everything, you know, is back to normal. We're going to send students abroad. And it wasn't a term that I don't really love using, but quote unquote, the new normal. So I feel like the intergenerational piece is one of the layers on top of, you know, many of the other layers that we're sort of navigating, hybrid work, remote work, all of this sort of I think you can't consider one without the other. But I do think that one of the key things when I think about just big picture multi-generational offices is just sort of taking stock of that. I think that, you know, we've all had a lot on our plates, again, in pressure to get students back out there, get numbers back up, and look at all these things. But I think for me, personally, it's been just really important to just look around and say, okay, this isn't what it was. We do have a lot of different generations. What is actually happening here? You know, I don't know that I always have all the answers, but I think it's been important just to identify and just sort of note it and see how is this shift of the dynamic? What are the opportunities here? What are maybe some of the challenges as well that come with that? I've found it to be very important to communicate upward to leadership as well that, you know, may not see it in the same way or, you know, experience it day to day, depending on how their teams are set up. And so I've found that just to be sort of almost in that identification stage, saying this is a thing that's different on top of the remote work and the hybrid work and the post-COVID and all of that. So I feel like that's where I'm sort of am, is sort of looking at the landscape of it all and making sure to communicate that and pay attention to it.
Ryan, OSU has a model that's somewhat unique in education abroad, but one that's certainly strategic. I understand that you are embedded in the College of Food, Agriculture, Environmental Sciences, CFAES. How does your placement within the college serve to advance study abroad goals for the college and for OSU at large?
I would say that it's my role and the way it's set up kind of perfect for the interaction that I'd like to have with students. So to zoom out on that a little bit, it's really easy for administrators or leadership to say that they support study abroad. Like that is something that lots of folks like to say. We hear it all the time. It's a much different thing to financially support it and be intentional with how are you getting it in front of your students. We're not the only college here at Ohio State that has embedded staffer positions. There's a couple colleges that have similar models to how we're set up. Kind of being strategic, the things that I love about my role, number one, just geographically, my office is here kind of on the west side of campus. And our campus, really all of our agricultural environmental science buildings are separated physically by a river. The old Tangi River goes right through the center of Ohio State's campus, right next to the horseshoe, where most folks, if they know Ohio State, that's the football stadium, which is kind of in the middle. So there's a geographical kind of separation for some of our students. And I kind of want to talk about a few of the benefits there. So on my team where I'm at within academic programs on my CFAES side, I'm working with folks on our recruitment team. Our scholarship office is right next door. Our career development office is just three offices down from where I'm at. Our embedded mental health counselor within the college is right next to me. This office that I'm kind of placed in within the college is kind of the student's one-stop shop, where it's like, what resources do I need on campus? Hey, I have one central place where I'm going to go. The benefit for me within study abroad is I am meeting our students at their first point of contact when they come to Ohio State. A part of my role outside of study abroad is supporting our recruitment team. So we do these things called Experience Ohio State for a Day tours, where high school students are able to sign up and come to campus with their parents. They get to shadow a current student on campus and kind of spend the day with them. And their parents get to interact with many of our staff members. So what that job looks like for me is I get to take a lot of parents out to lunch throughout the early spring semester. I get to learn about what their students are interested in. But really, I get to introduce them to the idea of study abroad, you know, really early on, and how our programs impact their students' degrees. Get to talk to the benefit of having kind of these embedded programs that'll actually impact degrees so they could fulfill a degree requirement by studying abroad. It's not something that's going to add time onto graduation. So really just an opportunity to kind of knock down some of those myths that we pretty commonly hear when it goes to study abroad. So students are kind of coming in with more of that open mind. So for me, you know, the embedded staffer position here, I'm getting to see students right at the beginning, but I'm also getting to interact with them throughout their college career. So my number one thing whenever I'm visiting a classroom or talking with a student organization, I just want students to know we exist and to be interested in setting up a meeting with me or our manager here in the office, Elizabeth, because that's our takeaway. At the end of the day, we know it's already a win if we can get in front of students and begin having that conversation with them so they're not kind of just writing us off because they think it's not something maybe that's for them. You know, study abroad's for everybody, and we've got programs that can meet a number of different students' profiles for what they can make happen. Being embedded here in the college, it really helps with that student interaction side. You know, I'm getting in front of students in unique ways. I'm an advisor for our CFAES Student Council, which is kind of our like undergraduate kind of student government. So they interact with tons of different clubs and organizations. So It's really just another way to get intentional and be in front of students and make sure they know what opportunities are available to them.
We love to break a myth here on the pod, so thank you for putting in the good work, my friend. Jeannie, a glance at TikTok or Instagram will tell us that there are stereotypes about each generation. Tell us, though, why is it imperative to move beyond the jokes and see the benefits that each generation brings to ultimately have a strong team that provides strong services? Specifically, how have you seen diverse perspectives lead to better outcomes at OSU?
What's Instagram and TikTok? No, just kidding. Gen X. You mentioned Facebook. I'm just kidding. So yes, the jokes are there. Even amongst ourselves, yeah, there absolutely seems to be like a massive upswing of these kind of parodies. And, you know, there's always some truth in all of those stereotypes, I think. And I'm, you know, one of the people who actually kind of enjoys seeing all of those too. But I think age and generation are one of the like last things or few things that are actually okay to make fun of. And I was thinking about that, like nothing else, the way that people sort of mock it and tease and joke, would never do that about any other sort of identifiers. And so I think, you know, maybe it is wise to start thinking about it a little bit more seriously as an identifier in the same ways that, you know, of course, in education abroad, we always think about diverse perspectives and how valuable they are. And then society just kind of leaves that one hanging and it's just a punchline. So I think sort of elevating it in the same way we elevate other identifiers and the richness that those bring is something that we all need to do more work on and, you know, kind of go beyond the punchline. I think just how you do that, and this is very much speaking, you know, putting myself on blast here, that, you know, to move beyond it, you kind of almost have to do as we always say to our students. When you're going into a new culture, you're learning about new people, you have to come from a place of curiosity, you have to educate yourself, you have to think, you know, with an open mind, you have to be humble. You have to realize that you bring something to the equation as well. And so that is something I've been trying to think of, because I'm not going to say that I, you know, haven't had my moments, even about myself and as a Gen Xer and other people, you're like, oh boy, you know, it's easy to fall into that. But you wouldn't do that when you're going into a new culture. You wouldn't do that about other identities. And so I think that's been sort of my own attempt at growth in this area and thinking and framing it in a different way and trying to put myself, like I said, to the test to think about it in that different way. So that's kind of my own evolution there. But I think one of the things when you think about a team, having a strong team, and team is everything to me. I just think it's so important that, you know, nothing else can matter, but you've got to have each other's backs. And I think that's something I've always tried to instill no matter what is going on. Like we may have different approaches, but working backwards, we have the same shared goal. Everyone is here because they want to send students abroad. And I say that a lot, even if we're having a disagreement with somebody, you know, on campus about something, like, hey, we actually do all want the same thing. Let's work backwards from that. And I think that always brings me comfort to know no matter what is going on, we're all sort of working toward this shared mission that we all feel really passionately about. So I think just adding in those different layers and perspectives have been important. You know, I in an older generation, but also having been here a while, I have had to hear myself say, well, you know, this is how it's always been done. And sometimes even subconsciously. And we've had a lot of great new energy and perspectives come to the team who haven't been afraid to say, whoa, let's think about that. And so that's been humbling, but helpful, I think, in my growth. You know, you never stop growing. You can always learn from everybody, regardless of generation. And so I've really tried to value that because, like, you're right. You know, it is a fallback, you know, and I'll admit, you know, there's a lot of great experience and institutional knowledge, which comes with having been in a particular place for a while, but it can also be a deficit. And I think knowing that and being honest about that has been helpful for me. And I've really felt lucky that people have been helpful in bringing perspectives and people have felt comfortable about it. So I feel, you know, proud to be part of a team that is always willing to speak up and point things out. And it's not always easy. You know, we're always a work in progress. I'm not going to say we figured it out. We've had a lot of change here, like many people across the field. So I think that it's been, yeah, tremendously helpful and ultimately strengthening. Even if working toward that shared goal, there may be the different perspectives, but stopping and again, having that value, like we said, that just hasn't always been there for discussion about this identifier.
I love what you said about, you know, regardless of which age that we identify with, we should aspire to never stop learning because there's always more to learn. Ryan, I know you identify as Gen Z, and I like to think of you as someone to be quite thoughtful on the topic of communication and how it looks in 2024. Could you speak to some of the challenges and successes of communicating with staff, faculty, and students, wherever they are?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was kind of thinking about this topic, obviously, going into this episode, and it is an ongoing challenge. I mean, that's like the only way to describe it, and it's constantly changing, you know, every single day. These are really three separate groups, but, you know, staff and faculty, I would almost address similarly, at least on like what my philosophy is with them. It's really funny that our business is essentially dictated by email, right? That's everything we do. Business is conducted over email. We have it in black and white. Because of the nature of the business, we need to be able to point back to what was agreed upon, what were the plans, whatever folks' understanding was going into a project for who was responsible for what. So obviously it's vital. The problem with email is every single person at this institution and around the world that works in this field is overwhelmed by email. We get all sorts of email all day long. So it's like, how do you balance the thing that you have to do with the most impactful version of communication? So for me, with faculty and staff, if I can walk to someone's office and talk with them in person, that is always going to be my first choice of communication, and I find it to be the most effective. There's never a angry email, really, that ever gets sent off of a misunderstanding from an in-person conversation. The opposite is not true. All sorts of folks are misunderstood through email all the time, you know, based on tone or how a subject is presented. So for me, that's always going to be my first choice, is either picking up the phone or chatting with somebody, and then obviously sending an email to summarize whatever our understanding was for what the plan is or whatever we agreed upon. I feel like I learn lessons on that every single day. I mean, it changes all the time, especially with faculty, not to single out that as a population, but you work with different faculty members very differently. You know, folks have completely different preferences on how they want to be communicated with. What level of detail do they want to know going through a program, or are they at a granular level? They want to be involved on every single decision, or hey, they kind of have a big picture idea of what they want to get done, and they just want to kind of hear summaries, you know, as we go along with the process. So, you know, my role here in the college, I'm primarily a faculty-led coordinator. That's kind of the bread and butter of my job. And it's something that I take a lot of pride in. You have to put a ton of time and effort into these relationships to make them relationships that are hopefully positive working relationships as you are progressing through kind of the program planning stage. And also trying to recruit them as champions for study abroad. There's nothing more impactful here at the institution than students actually hearing from faculty that genuinely care and want students to have that experience. And that's just a big piece of it. So, you know, logistically, liking to use kind of those in-person models to talk with folks, but also following up over email whenever we can. On the student side, it is even more true when we're talking about, you know, students reading or not reading emails. They are overwhelmed by the amount of communication they're getting. And that's not isolated to email, right? The world that we live in right now, every single person walking this earth is getting more and more advertisements in their face, to a point where, you know, if you have a cell phone, you really can't escape it. So what are the ways that you can kind of break through almost the numbness of how many different areas our attention is being drawn from? So for our students, I would say a large population of them is on Instagram, and I'll always want to give props to our communication team in OIA. They do a fabulous job keeping our OSU Global Instagram populated with great photos of students abroad, providing opportunities for them. But we also know that that is just like, you know, the hand getting raised, or like the flag that a student might see that starts that conversation with study abroad. It doesn't totally, you know, bring them into the fold. It doesn't make a decision for them, but it is advertising, which is kind of how many students, I think, even identify that study abroad is something that they might even want to be interested in. So, you know, social media has changed so much, even in the last 5 years. It's really hard to describe. But it really, it's all about trying to meet them where they are. And that's constantly changing. Instagram's a big portion of them. TikTok is an even bigger portion of them, you know, right now. We'll see what our federal legislators decide on what even the future is of TikTok here in this country. But, you know, study abroad offices around the country have had to decide, are we going to dive into this head first and use it as a platform that we're going to advertise with? It was an idea kind of during COVID, and we'll talk about it a little later. Our office launched a podcast, the Buckeyes Broadcast, as another idea to try and meet students with where they are at. Again, I'll talk about it a little bit more, but it's really just about finding those places. And we still cover maybe historically what's always been done. We'll hang flyers on campus sometimes. We'll do classroom visits as much as we can. It's really impactful to get in front of our student clubs on campus. At least in my experience, that's a place that I found a lot of students that are interested in getting involved. We know every single year there's a large population of students that we're still not reaching. What are the questions that we're asking? Or, you know, where are the places in the shadows that our light is not touching within the office? What are the changes we need to make in order to get in front of those students? So it's an ongoing challenge and an ongoing opportunity for our office. So, you know, there's not a perfect answer. It just, I think effort is, you know, always going to be appreciated. And kind of what Jeannie was just talking about on the last question, like, that's one of my favorite parts, I guess. I'm working on a collaborative team, which is folks hopefully are constantly asking questions on, just because we've done it this way for, you know, 20 years, does it actually make sense for the student in 2024? And I think that even within these last 3 years, we found, hey, some of the stuff we've done for a long time isn't as impactful as it was. Or, you know, how much is study abroad just as a phrase selling itself as it was even 10 years ago? All of that has changed.
Oh, you make a really good point about the world being a noisy place in 2024. As you were speaking, Ryan, I think I received about 5 separate notifications on my phone, which I try to keep face down during these conversations, but it's still a noisy place. But I love the intentionality that you all have at Global Education at OSU to find a way to break through that noise. And Jeannie, we know that every generation brings skill sets that are of value, and we love us a story time here on the pod. Could you share with us how you have seen old school lessons come in handy today?
You know, I've been thinking about this a lot with Gen X and just talking to even, you know, friends outside of the biz of study abroad, where we're almost like ambidextrous with an analog world and a digital world. Literally half our lives as Gen Xers were sort of more analog, old school, and then the other half have, you know, had some sort of digital, you know, impact. And so I feel like we, you know, can kind of move between those mostly comfortably. But just over spring break, I have the good fortune of accompanying a group to London. And there's a lot of navigation that needs to happen, obviously, in a city like London with the underground. And, you know, we've been saying, hey, you know, your phone can get you almost everywhere, but there's not always service on the tube underground. It can die, you can lose it. And, you know, we're all about, of course, in study abroad, you know, optimists who plan for worst case scenarios and, you know, about redundancies. I'm like, you know, they've got to still have the little hard copy tube maps. And of course, they're in the stations. And I said, you've got to sort of know both. And I think that was sort of an interesting experience because that did happen quite a bit where today's students, they've never had to look at, you know, an old school map or even, you know, look at what's just there on the walls in the underground station and in their phones. And there were many a time where they're like, I'm so glad you told us that. And it wasn't even just me being old school or older than them. It was just like, oh yeah, this makes sense. And a lot of them hadn't traveled, that you need to have backup, you need to have options. And, you know, I think they were like, oh, now I can actually see how things all connect. And it's not just sort of that blindly following what, you know, your phone tells you to do without sort of seeing how did it interconnect with where we were yesterday and how did it connect with where we're going tomorrow and sort of having that bigger appreciation, you know, geographically. Of course, me and the other two leaders, we'd split up for lunch and we were going to meet up the group. And guess what we did? We put in navigation into our phones and without any critical thinking went to the wrong place because the navigation wasn't correct. And we're actually late meeting the group who all successfully did that and said, didn't you tell us we shouldn't just not critically think? And I'm like, yes, I will eat my humble pie right now. And yeah, this is exactly why, because without thinking, you're talking, you're just sort of following these instructions, not really plugged into thinking. And so I think that was just a recent example, a little story time of thinking about those old school lessons. And they couldn't believe, they're like, how did you get places when you were in college? And honestly, I'm like, I don't know. It's like trying to remember, you know, life before all of that. And so it did actually lead to some really interesting conversations with both ways, kind of thinking about, you know, how does one get one place and how much that's changed. And they even had memories of being little kids sitting in the back seat with, you know, MapQuest printouts in their hands. And so it ended up actually being a really, really long conversation about how we find our way around the world and what's old school and new school and why you like, they almost complement each other. Like I said, there's almost that kind of ambidextrousness of moving between the analog and digital.
Fascinating. I'm heartened to hear that the college students of today still know what MapQuest is. Phew. Ryan, as in so many aspects of life, relationships are what truly matters. Could you speak to balancing the importance of relationship building and the value of finding ways for a team to engage with each other regularly and how that intersects with the rapidly changing world of remote and hybrid work.
I mean, it's really a kind of a balancing act is what comes to mind, you know, on all that. So post-2020, the way we worked changed a ton. And a lot of offices, and this isn't isolated to higher education, this is all sorts of different jobs and professions, found, hey, there can be flexibility. We don't all have to pack a lunch and be sitting at our desks from 8 to 5 every day of the week with a shirt and tie. That was how it was described to me, at least when I started at CFA, yes, that was the culture of folks, you know, we need you here, we need you on campus and available. Things like Zoom, you know, what we're doing here right now, even being able to record a podcast online, stuff being available virtually has made, you know, the work that we do in some ways be more flexible than ever. And on the employer side, that's something that employees are looking for. They're looking for flexibility in their lifestyle and being able to balance what they're passionate about at work, but also making sure they have some separation and the ability to, you know, live their best lives outside of work. So, you know, that's one side of the teeter-totter. The other side, the value of those in-person relationships, the collaboration that happens when people are in person, and I guess the value of kind of taking what is just a normal maybe cubicle relationship or whatever to the next level on the team, which is, hey, we want to be open communicators. We want this to be a space where people feel like they can be vulnerable or even feel like that they can take risks when it comes to creating new ideas. For me, a lot of that comes from just getting to know each other better. So, you know, Zoom is great for being able to stay connected, but it's really poor for developing relationships and actually genuinely strengthening kind of those bonds between each other. It's funny because I don't know if this is an intentional decision or based on the space that we have in our Office of International Affairs in Anderson, but we have a weekly meeting every Wednesday at 9 a.m. and it is fully in person. It has been kind of since we came out of COVID. Part of that being the technology in the room does not allow really for remote meetings, but the benefit of that being, it's been a very consistent thing that we've done, you know, for a number of years. I mean, at least since I've started, and I think it's been that way for, you know, a long time, even before that. It's something that I really appreciate, which is we have kind of a sovereign time every single week where everyone is together sitting in the same room. And most of the time, our meetings are pretty busy as far as like things that we need to cover. But it is just a point where we know we're all going to be there, whether it be needing to connect with a colleague afterward or you had a meeting that you needed to chat with somebody else about before or after the meeting. It's kind of just like a central point for everyone to meet during the week. And now in this post-COVID, whatever we're calling this era that we're living in right now, a lot of our colleagues have flexible schedules where they're working remote a couple days a week. They're in the office some days a week. But, you know, we do have kind of that central point where everybody's there at the same time, which I find a lot of value in that, especially for me as somebody who's not in Anderson, the main Office of International Affairs, every single day, because my desk, like I mentioned before, I'm still physically embedded in our college. So it's an opportunity for me to interact with folks during the workday in person, which I really value. Now, getting back to the question, you know, how do you strengthen these relationships? It takes a lot of intentionality outside of work or inside of work, depending on how it's set up. And I know that that's a value at Genies throughout the year. There's a number of times where we'll kind of take a field trip, for lack of a better word, you know, to either do a service project together or team lunch or team building activity outside of the walls, you know, of our office. It has been my experience, at least every single time we walk away from these things thinking, hey, we should do this more. You know, we get to work and interact and talk with folks that we don't get to on a normal day-to-day basis. It's really funny because that's what we preach and study abroad, right? You know, you have the academic side of any program that a student's participating in, but those soft benefits that students get from a program are my favorite thing to harp on with students or with parents, which are you make friends when you put yourself in an uncomfortable or unfamiliar situation that you're going through with other folks. It is a shared bond and a shared relationship that just kind of strengthens maybe that connection that you have. So, you know, in some ways that's mirrored even within our office, right? What are the things that we're doing out of the ordinary together that kind of strengthen those relationships? So there's a value to both. I definitely understand the flexibility and the value folks have and kind of keeping some of that time where they're able to work from home or work remotely. But there's, I think that students have found it and I definitely feel it personally. There is nothing that can replace an in-person connection with folks. And there's just been so much value for that on our team, I think, with people getting to know each other.
Artfully put, my friend. You know, what you said made me think back to the virtual happy hours that were all the rage in the years of 2020 and 2021. Hope to never have to do one of those again. Jeannie, on a related note, what is a change in the approach to work and to life that you have observed in the workplace over time?
I think it's hard to even imagine, but when I started my career, I don't think the term work-life balance existed. I don't think flex time were words that we use. It sounds so harsh now and, you know, 2024 light, but it wasn't. It just was the way it was. And it was, you work as much as you need to. 40 is the minimum and your salary, and you get the job done. And, you know, people worked a lot, and that was sort of the expectation. And that was, you know, widespread. So I think as different generations have come into the workplace, this is one of my favorite things, and contributions I think that generations coming in after my generation have moved the needle on this. I think, you know, institutions as well have. I mean, no one talked about employee wellness either, you know, and so I think it's a combination of universities trying to recognize that, workplaces in general, not just higher education, but I think there are some real firm lines that generations after mine have about that, and that didn't exist. And I think some of us might even have a little bit of, you know, psychological baggage of, you know, you didn't necessarily advocate for that. You know, I think advocating was seen as a negative. You were seen as a squeaky wheel or whiny, and it's just like a head down, get yourself down, you know, get the job done. Where I think people have really moved the needle on that work-life balance, and that's more the expectation, and it's become more normalized to clock out at a certain time and to take time for oneself and to take care of oneself. So I feel like I've learned a lot in that space with that moving, and I think that it's changed much, much more for the better. And I think that, yeah, people being willing to advocate for it. I'm always going to advocate fiercely for the team. It's always sometimes harder to do that for oneself. And so having positive examples, honestly, of role models around, I think have helped many of us who sort of came in with a different mindset of what work life looks like, have benefited a lot from seeing people saying, no, there's boundaries, there's ways to say no, there are certain guardrails that need to be put up. So it's definitely improved, I think.
Well, Jeannie, you touched on a couple of things that really epitomize the way that I feel about Gen X. I often view Gen X as the bridge in between the way things were and the way things are. In many ways, I very much look up to Gen X, who are often, you know, labeled the forgotten generation. What would you say is something that Gen X brings from a leadership perspective?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of the jokes and parodies we talked about are, you know, how Gen X kind of had to raise themselves. And, you know, again, making a massive stereotype that is kind of true. And so I think that brings a lot of resourcefulness and, you know, sort of problem solving, creative thinking. The expectation was you figure things out, you sort yourself out, you sort things out. So I think there is a lot of that, I think, translates pretty well to just the workplace, but to leadership perspective as well. There's sort of a quintessential movie about Gen X called Reality Bites that came out, you know, right when we're all coming out of college. And so just the title alone, right? So we already didn't have any like disillusion about the workplace being the end all be all. It sort of set, in a way, it sounds almost backwards to say, but it set a low bar, which I think in some ways we were, you know, had a little bit of healthy cynicism coming into the workplace. You know, like Reality Bites, that's where we started our careers, thinking that is what is the norm. Anything else on top of that is a bonus. And that may sound kind of funny, but I think that's maybe shielded us from maybe having disappointment about certain things. It was like, no, it was never promised to be this beautiful green pasture and all these things. We sort of already knew that work is a grind. Work can be challenging. And that's where you start. If it's fulfilling and satisfying and happy, bonus. But that was never the expectation. And I think we sort of had a little bit of a cynicism, which I think has made it be where we can sort of problem solve and maybe get along with a lot of people, because that's just what you were supposed to do. So I think certainly the resourcefulness.
And Ryan, I understand that you also work on a podcast, Buckeyes Abroad, of which I am a subscriber and a fan. So you and I have a lot in common, my friend. Could you tell us about the podcast, its intended audience, and an episode or topic that is particularly meaningful to you?
Back in 2020, our office was really looking for just ways to engage with students. That was really limited to in-person experiences. You know, it was something that I, even before I started, kind of came in with this idea, because we looked at the field really, and there really wasn't a ton of podcasts related to study abroad. There were some academic related things and resources for faculty or staff when it comes to programs or really just kind of exploring the world. A colleague of mine, Charlie Gabor, I forget exactly how the first idea was launched, but essentially Charlie and I were like, we'll put our hands up. Yeah, we'll kind of run with this concept, make the idea happen. And our hashtag within the Office of International Affairs is hashtag Buckeyes Abroad. You know, that's what the comm team's always looking for folks to make sure is getting tagged with photos on social media so we can share everything. So the podcast name really was just birthed from that. Buckeyes Abroadcast is where you can find us on, you know, any platform where you listen to your podcast. Podcast itself, the initial idea was just to share information, but even in 2020, kind of my long-term goal was I see this as another avenue for students to be able to learn and engage with programming, essentially from the recruitment side as we're thinking about that, you know, as a job. And in the beginning, you know, we were connecting with professors that maybe they did international work that they just wanted to share about. We had a few generic episodes just kind of educating students on programming types, scholarships, and financial aid that were available, just opportunities essentially at Ohio State. And now a couple of years down the line, it has kind of graduated into that kind of initial goal, which is I want to talk with students about their experiences on programs, because for our students, there's no really more valuable insight than hearing from a student that participated in this same program maybe that they're looking at from the year before. That's kind of the primary role of the podcast now is I throw it out at team meetings all the time. I get referrals, you know, quite often, and folks are starting to take me up on it more and more. But you know, really just who is that rock star student that had an excellent experience on the program that can talk about the whole program from start to finish, from learning about the program through pre-departure to how did OIA prepare me to be successful while abroad to the fun stuff. What were my favorite things I saw? What were the coolest things that we learned about on the program? How is it going to impact your long-term career academic goals? It's a promotion on one side, but it's also kind of a library of information is kind of what it's turning into, which is hearing from that student's first person perspective on, you know, how did they see the impact of the program going? So yeah, it's definitely a passion project, I would call it, of mine. I mean, we're doing our podcast right now to pull the curtain back on Friday morning. This is typically when I record Buckeyes at Broadcast time. So it's nice to have a little bit of time set aside to be able to contribute to a project like this. But really at its foundation, it's another way to connect with students. And even on our program webpages now, you know, slowly you're going to begin seeing hyperlinks that say, listen to a student's perspective on the Buckeyes at Broadcast pertaining to this program. So when students are looking and researching programs down the road, they just have another opportunity to connect with a program individually.
I just love the work that you have done to elevate student stories, but also just shine a light on the work that the Office of Global Education does for others on campus and within the larger Ohio State community. So once again, congratulations, my friend, to both to you and to everyone who's contributed to this project. And I do want to highlight this to our listeners that they can find Buckeyes Abroadcast wherever they get their podcasts. And as we begin to wrap up here, I just have one more question for the two of you. And Ryan, we'll start with you. As you think about education abroad in 2024, what makes you hopeful?
You know, it's funny to say it like this, and I'm knocking on my wooden desk that I literally have here in CFA. Yes, but the word that comes to mind for me that like brings like a little bit of comfort and hopefulness is stability, which is crazy to say, right? As you read the headlines across the world right now and, you know, the different things that we obviously have going on, we're still in a completely different environment than we were 4 years ago, even 3 years ago at this point. And with the work that we're doing when we're constantly forecasting, I always say 15 months out, you know, that's what we're always thinking of whenever we're looking at locations that we're going to send students to. For the most part, we feel really good, feel confident about sending students to, you know, 95% of the places that we're looking at around the world. We've had some great additions to our office even recently, and Jeannie might talk about it in her answer when she thinks about, you know, what makes her hopeful to study abroad, but just kind of that confidence, because there were a couple of years there where it was like, we're selling, you know, we're talking with students about programs and opportunities that are happening, but how confident do we feel that the program will happen on the ground? And it wasn't 100%. You know, no person would be able to honestly answer that they felt terrific back in 2021 that a program was going to travel in 2022. But every year that we've worked ourselves away kind of from that global development, we felt more confident. So stability is what comes to mind for me when I think about 2024.
And to you, Jeannie, as you contemplate education abroad in 2024, what makes you hopeful?
I definitely will never take, not that I took anything for granted before, I don't think, of sending students abroad, but I think we appreciate it all the more than ever before in current day. So that is a nice place to be. And honestly, I always get hopeful from the students. I think that's cliche to say, but I think unless you don't get excited, and you know, take it back to the topic of new generations of students coming in. And again, in higher ed, we can always joke about, oh, these students, but you know, you're sort of dead in the water if you don't find, in this kind of work, if you don't find it interesting to learn about what are the new trends, what are the new quirks, or what are the new ways to communicate, or what are the, you know, how we do this. And so I think probably now more than ever, just what students have been through, mental health being a crisis, the world being in a lot of turmoil, they're very brave, you know, to decide to make this choice. So for any student who just kind of puts themselves out there, a lot of students, it's not unusual for students who have never been out of Ohio or never been on a plane. We have a lot of students who travel the world too. Just the diversity of students and all that they've had to, I think, go through in a short amount of time in their lives and to care so passionately. I love that students are so interested in combating climate change and social justice. These are things that I think generations maybe before them didn't quite embrace as much, or something kind of later. College was a bit more of a selfish time, I think. Just you and your thing and your friends and, you know, maybe social lives and how engaged they are for things that might not even have anything to do with their major. And then just really sort of brave to get out there and do it and to be, I just think, so informed. I find a lot of inspiration, a lot of excitement, looking sort of at what's coming behind me, honestly, more than what's ahead of me when I think about, oh, good, these are our future doctors. These are future politicians. These are the people who I'll be relying on to run the world when I'm old and retired. And so I feel good about it. I feel like they're you know, going to rise to the occasion. So that's what I'm excited about.
I can't imagine a better place to end things than right here. Ryan Vonderhaar and Jeannie Simmons, what a wonderful conversation. Thank you both for being here. And to our listeners, thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Changing Lives Through Education Abroad. I am your host, Zach McInnes, and please make sure to join us next week as we continue to explore topics on international education and exchange. Thank you to my spectacular World Strides colleagues, Lindsay Kelcher and Sarah Kachuba, without whom this podcast would not be possible. Please subscribe to Changing Lives Through Education Abroad on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And share with your friends and colleagues. Let's create life-changing moments together.